dim my screen and maybe be just fine.
Okay, I'm going to start as a whisper. We're just trying out these new microphone systems. Can you hear me okay back there? We're good to go. Okay. So we don't need to talk very loudly into the microphone for there to be good sound. But we're excited to have this new mic system. We're testing it out. If you've turned it on in the back, you need to push the round button on the front of your unit to talk. Turn the light green, and that means your mic is hot. And I guess you have to hold it down if you don't want anybody to hear what you're saying. Is that right? Or turn it off again. So, okay, the treasurer's live now. He's figured it out. But now he can't go silent.
Christmas colors.
Yes, red and green, red and green. Welcome, everyone, to the Permanent Community Impact Fund Board review meeting for Thursday, December 14th, 2017. We will get started with the staff briefing, turn some time over to Candace to go over those items and item number one.
This is the second meeting of the second trimester of fiscal year 2018. It's good to see you here at this busy season. Please excuse Commissioner Bruce Adams, who has indicated he would not be in attendance, and Commissioner Jim Mattson, who will not be sharing what he referred to as flu-like illness.
Oh, no.
The agenda indicates seven new projects today listed for board review, and they're in yellow on your financial sheet. Two are listed from coming in off the pending list, and one special consideration for a change of scope. This is not a new funding request on the change of scope. This is a request from Johnson Water to use the remaining funding for a scope of work that was not included on the original application, and there is no new funding. It's the policy and rule that all applicants must have a public hearing to discuss their projects prior to board review. So Mazur Water Improvements District had indicated that their public hearing would be December 7th, but when staff contacted Mazur for a copy of the minutes, it was discovered that the public hearing was scheduled for December 14th, which is tomorrow. Mazur has chosen to pull their application from this meeting. So there are really six new projects to discuss. On the fund summary, and in board docs, it's 1-2. Please review those numbers. The board could provide much needed infrastructure and improvements with the available funding. The bonus fund is a low interest opportunity. Please express that to those looking to improve their communities or their infrastructure, that is a good source because the loan term can be extended to about 30 years, unlike other lending institutions, depending on the revenue source. Also, it is important to keep the mineral lease fund revolving, wherein 0% loans are a possibility, not all grant. The increase in the mineral lease account is due to prior loans, and those repayments are coming back into the fund. The throughput infrastructure balance continues to build because the new mineral lease monies that come into the state are now being provided through UDOT for road projects to accommodate that throughput infrastructure fund. And the large infrastructure fund is also listed. Friendly reminder, under Utah Code 35A8307, the Impact Board shall administer the Impact Fund in a manner that will keep a portion of the Impact Fund revolving. You have a red folder today, and in the red folder is the rainbow sheet that indicates a five-year view of what the board has provided by way of loans and grants and what the various entities have revenued into this fund. Please sign in if you haven't signed in. I'm sure Chairman Hardy will remind you of that from time to time, but just one final note. When we introduce these applications, applications. We want the applicants to know that HCD can and does make reimbursement payments in an expedited manner if the supporting documentation is adequate. We can get payments out in as short as 48 hours, which is well above the 30-day turnover that is typical for most industries. Just wanted to make that marketing plug. The first application, did you want to go there? Oh, but I'll discuss it when you bring it up.
Okay, thank you, Candace. With that, we will get started with item two, which is the welcome and introductions. I think I already did the welcome, but we'll go around the room and do the introductions of the board members. We'll start over with Mr. Galecki. And turn your mics hot.
Well, so. It already was. Is there a way to turn it off after it's hot?
I think you have to just turn it off in the back.
Back because we were playing with it. Okay.
Good morning, everybody. My name's Greg Galecki. I represent the Water Quality Board.
I'm Sonia Norton. I'm the Vernal City Mayor, and I represent Uinta County.
Good morning. I'm Steve Farrell. I represent the Board of Water Resources.
Good morning. My name is Nagi Zanati. I'm bringing warm and sunny greetings from sunny St. George and from Washington County, and also the UDOT Commission that I represent. And I wish every one of you Merry Christmas.
I'm Chris Reed, the admin assistant.
Chris Reed doesn't usually talk, so she didn't get a microphone.
I'll share.
And we have sunny Salt Lake City today. I'm Candace Powers with the Community Impact Board.
Good morning, Keith Heaton with the Community Development Office.
Jonathan Hardy with the Department of Workforce Services, Chair of the Board.
Good morning, David Damshin, State Treasurer. As a resident of the Wasatch Front, I'm envious of those of you that will be leaving and going back to fresh air at some point later today, perhaps. And Mr. Galecki, all you have to do is push and hold the button down.
That didn't work for ours. We had to turn it on and off.
So holding it down, just keep your finger on there.
Okay. Now hold it off.
Yeah, just like that. You might cramp up.
I tried it, but okay. I need to be task trained. So
I'm cramping right now.
I'm Tom Roberts with the Utah Attorney General's Office. I act as legal advisor to the board.
Ron Winterton, representing Duchesne County.
Tudor Ogden from Sevier County, representing the AOG for the Six Counties Association of Governments.
Dale Gardner with Housing and Community Development.
Okay. Thank you, everybody, for introducing yourselves. I know we have many members of the audience. I'm sure we'll hear from many of you as we discuss these projects. We'll go to item number three, approval of the minutes from the November 9th, 2017 meeting. We've had an opportunity to review those and would entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, so I guess you got to be faster on the microphone now. Mr. Zanotti with a motion to approve the minutes and a second from Councilman Farrell. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Any further discussion to the minutes? All in favor of approval, say aye.
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 Any opposed? That passes unanimously. The minutes are approved. We will move into our projects. So Candace has indicated that Mazer is tabled.
Mm-hmm.
Or will come at a future agenda item. So that is not going to be considered at this time. We'll move to item number two, which is the Duchesne County Special Service District number two. Is that the project name? Number two. Or you guys number your special service districts out in Duchesne County. Is that what it is? This is the number two. So we'll invite you to come up at this time. We'll turn the time over to Candace for a briefing on this project, and then we'll hear from our applicant and then go to the board for questions.
Duchesne County Special Service District number two has presented a funding application request for Lake Borum Road improvements. This is phase two. The road is southwest of Roosevelt and west of Mighton in Duchesne County. The request is for $3,877,000. of which there is a $500,000 15-year at 0% loan and $3,377,000 grant. This is for removal of existing pavement and base material, pulverizing and use in reconstructing the roadway. There will be realignment of some portions of this, as indicated in the application. And when there is realignment, SHPO likes to be advised of that realignment. They'll be widening the road in some way, in some areas, a new subway, new sub base, base and hotway.
Wow, you guys are really advanced out there. New subway system.
Wow.
It's a small request for a subway system.
It's an air quality thing. Hot mix asphalt will be installed in the realigned areas, and the shoulder width will be increased, so drainage will be improved. And there will be signage and chip seal to cover Lake Borum and Arcadia Road corridors. Now, this project also includes a chip seal on the Bluebell Corridor Phase 3 for a total of approximately 15 miles of roadway. The CIB funded the Bluebell Connector Phase 1 and at a $2 million grant, which was 50% CIB, and Duchesne provided the other 50%. And CIB also funded Bluebell Connector Phase 3 for $4,464,000 in grant funds, which is 60% CIB, but Phase 2 was accommodated by Duchesne Special Service District Number 2. Again, the Utah Historic Preservation Office recommends that an archaeologist complete an inventory of any parts of the project that will be realigned or expanded outside its current footprint. The Special Service District will be contributing $1,751,000 to this project. And the public hearing minutes did not mention Bluebell Corridor.
Yeah, they did.
So if the applicant could speak to those things.
That conclude your briefing?
Yes.
Okay. So if you have a red light, you still need to push the button to make it green. Okay, are we both green there? So why don't you introduce yourselves to us and maybe add anything, maybe answer some of Candace's questions that she brought up there as well before we go to the board.
I'm Roger Ames, the Special Service District Chairman, and we are here to propose for some funding for our project, which is to redo the road in Arcadia where we have had a lot of oil traffic that is there. There's agriculture in the area. The Victory Pipeline went through there and impacted our road a little bit. We teamed up with the Duchesne County Water Conservancy District, and we have purchased right-of-ways. We have already had the right-of-ways in place to, when we get ready to do the road, it is prepared to, we already have the right-of-ways in place.
Yeah, and I'm Mike Colley.
Wow. Maybe I should just turn this one off. Just use one. But
I'm Mike Colley with Jones and DeMille Engineering. We helped the SSD number 2 prepare this application. And maybe as far as the Bluebell Road comment that Candace, I think that was the question I heard in Candace's comments. That is a chip seal on the Bluebell Road, so that it'll just be chip seal on what was there before. I thought we mentioned it in the public hearing, but if it's not in the minutes, then it's, you know, we can look at that and talk about it and and decide what to do there. But so yeah, was that the only question, Candace, that you had at the? Okay.
Well, also SHPO.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah, yeah, and we can certainly do. And I will mention this is in the Victory Pipeline corridor that was there were many ARC studies and biological studies and everything else in this corridor that we're working in, and so we can rely on those. But we will coordinate with SHPO and make sure that they're in the loop on what happens there and the appropriate if we need to do additional ARC surveys that they're accounted for. So
okay. We'll go to the board for questions. Remember, you have to have your green light on to ask a question.
can't just raise your hand and speak.
We want everybody to hear this awesome discussion we're going to have. So who wants to go on the green light here?
I can if you want.
Okay. Nagi.
Don't we have to have the SHPO in place before we even proceed with this committee?
They have contacted SHPO.
They have? Okay. That answers my question.
What was that, Candace?
They have contacted SHPO, but that is SHPO's request through that contact. It's a, they have an archaeologist on site. So you can make that as part of your motion.
Okay.
Again, with regard to historic preservation and archaeological resources, this board has the duty to take into account the effect of what it approves and what it does on archaeological and historic resources. And so you normally will work on complying with that duty by making sure there's a survey initially to see if there's anything there. If the survey finds things, they will probably then have to decide what to do, either move the road or move the resource in consultation with the board. Your rules, if not the contract, also provides that during construction, if they find something that they didn't know was there, they're required to stop, contact SHPO, and contact the board before they proceed any further. So those are the ways that you end up complying with your duties under that statute. So you maintain control over any resources that are found.
Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Winterton.
Just to clarify, you've done the road on both parts, so this is kind of in the middle of a project.
This is in the middle of a project.
And then if you would clarify for us also, you say the Victory Pipeline, so same alignment as what it went down, so likely that SHPO is not going to find anything because that's been done, correct?
We are going to move the road, shift the road a little bit to get away from the Victory Pipeline to help. We've had a few issues when the Victory Pipeline was put in. We've had the road fail a little bit, and so in the original plan, we were going to move the road anyway, and that's why the Victory Pipeline went where they did. It's because we had plans to move the shift the road over to a point. And take
by shifting it, you're talking 50 feet, 20 feet, or a mile?
It varies. And to answer your question, I think more fully there, the Victory Pipeline corridor that was surveyed encompasses this right-of-way. So it's all been surveyed before, but like we said, it you know, consultation with SHPO and their requirements will be met on this project. So.
Okay.
Yes, Mayor Norton.
I just wondered, since I don't know the history, when you came and did this phase one apparently, and then there was a phase three that was previously funded, was there any discussion that you'd be coming back for funding for this phase, or do you know
that,
what
was that on the Bluebell?
That was on Bluebell. So this is a different corridor on the.
But that was to do the Bluebell Road, but this is a different part of Bluebell that you're going
to
change.
This isn't even close to Bluebell.
You're not doing Bluebell?
We're done. Bluebell is done.
Well, it's got Bluebell Road Corridor Phase 3.
Yeah, let me clarify the chip. It sounds like there's a chip seal question. So there are about 15 miles, as Candace mentioned, that of roadways that the CIB or the district has funded in Duchesne County. New roadways in the past 2-3 years time frame that have not had a seal coat put on it. As part of this application, they were, you know, oftentimes that is included in each CIB application. The district in the past has covered all that cost and chip sealed every other road that they've done with CIB. They've added these in there just because of the current condition, the current situation the district's in to help preserve this asphalt long term. And so that's why Bluebell's in there. The only construction on Bluebell is a chip seal. That's it. The corridor is the Lake Borm Road corridor, and there was a phase that was completely funded by the district in 2013, and the Arcadia Road is the other side of this middle section that we're applying for now that was funded by the district and CIB in 2015.
Okay.
Or 2016. I apologize. So.
Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Galecki.
So
And percentage-wise, how much of it is realignment and how much of it is maintenance-type stuff on this project?
That's a good question. The vast majority is the realignment reconstruction of Lake Warm Road.
And as far as, sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, go ahead.
So as far as realignment, and it's basically within the same corridor and just, yes.
Yeah, the current roadway doesn't meet current ASHTO safety standards for geometry, horizontal and vertical. And so we're improving that, making it meet current safety standards is what we're doing.
And how much would you say, how much length of that is being, I'll tell you where I'm struggling, is I see almost $500,000 in engineering. And I want to, could you explain how that $500,000 is being spent as far as how many hours? Just, can you explain that?
Mm-hmm. Certainly. So we've got, that's $500,000 total. That includes design, construction, materials testing, all of the above for the project, which I think in the estimate is shown at 10% of the project cost. Most of that project cost, I don't have a breakdown here in front of me, but it is, I'm sure, in your packets, that is the realignment and reconstruction of Lake Borm Road. So there was a full geometric design, or is a full geometric design being done, horizontal, vertical, to make it meet ASHTO safety standards, as well as some utility work in the area to work with utility companies and look for those impacts for the utilities in the area. So as far as that goes, I think we're about 10% of the construction cost, which is where we needed to be for that work.
Another question I had is that it said equipment and facilities, $134,000. What's that?
That's utilities. So in that, there's a Moon Lake electric power line. There's a water line in the area. That's work to coordinate and then also help mitigate impacts to those lines as that geometry of the road has changed to meet current safety standards. So that's what that is.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Zanotti.
Roger, what is the source of your cash, $1,751,000? Where is that stands and where is it sitting?
That is money that we have in reserve to our mineral lease money that we get to make that up, and then the county is willing to come forth with some money to help us on that too.
And how you have come with a calculation that you want $3,300,000 for the grant and only $500,000 for the loan? Can you do the better mix than that? It's a Christmas time. We need to get the money for some other people too.
You want to answer that one?
Yeah, I can. The district has met. They had a pretty extensive discussion with Duchesne County, the commissioners, and the district to try to figure out how to get this to work. When the Victory Pipeline corridor or project went through, the district funded all of the right-of-way for both the pipeline and the roadway through this section, worked very closely with the Water Conservancy District to make this happen, with the idea the pipeline would go in and then the district with its own funds would realign this road, and they were done together so there would be no impacts between the Victory Pipeline and where the road needed to be. So it was a good planning process. They did all that work on their own, but with the current condition of mineral lease, they have not been able to come back and finish this. And so they had a very in-depth discussion of their finances, their current loans, projections of mineral lease coming in, and that's where the $500,000 loan amount came from. That's what they felt like they could afford going forward with the current condition of mineral lease money. Roger, do you want to add anything to
we've
that?
Spent almost $8 million. This is the middle portion of that road that we're just trying to finish it so that so you have the same type of road all the way through instead of going from a good road wide enough for all the truck traffic and agriculture in the area to have it completely finished through that section.
Okay.
Yes, Mr. Galecki.
So we talk about three phases and you say you put $8 million into it and such. I guess what I struggle with is did you know right from the beginning that, towards the end, phase three would be you know, so much grant that you're planning on, you know, getting the money for all grants, so to speak. That was part of the plan when you had all three phases worked out?
We were kind of pushed in because the Victory Pipeline has come through there, has kind of impacted the road. We were going to hold off on this till we had a little more money, but the way the impact of the oil industry in that area and with the Victory Pipeline coming through there, that's why we pushed forward to try to get this done this coming summer, if we can.
Yes, Mr. Winterton.
If I could answer part of that, Greg, at the time that this was all planned, we're going back 5 years. At the time, mineral lease was up and was, you know, in good shape. The last 2 years has dropped off to the point where this district is maintaining and paying back the loans that they have right now. So really, they don't have it, and the Victory Pipeline had to be finished totally through this area before you could construct it. That's why the middle of this, both projects, was not finished at the time, is that pipeline sits underneath the present road. And if they move it, it will eliminate any impacts to that. So it's kind of a couple of things there, is the economy dropped down in mineral lease, and then that other Victory Pipeline project had to finish up before you could actually do the road. So that's just clarification.
Yes, Mr. Farrell?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with this road. Who's the primary users of it, the oil tankers or the?
Mostly oil. I mean, there's local agriculture in that area, but in that particular area, the oil industry has really impacted. There are quite a few wells in that area, and it's a main road for a lot of the oil traffic in that area. With them planning the coming year or so to ramp up their drilling and oil production in that area, that's just one reason that we're trying to get this done.
Yes, Mr. Glucky.
It might be in the packet, but I'm still trying to find it. is there B&C funds available that are generated that would, you know, help on this? Help funding?
I can help answer that, or Ron looked like he was itching to say something. But the county receives B&C road money. I can't speak to the details of exactly how much is there and what it can do. I do know in Duchesne County, with the type of truck traffic that comes in at each one of those locations that is developed for those oil wells, is very, very significant, even for one well. And as we've met with oil companies doing business in this area in the past, it really they do have plans to expand what they're doing there into the future. So it's the impacts are great, and with that type of industry and that type of traffic, it's more than B&C road money can maintain. Especially when the road wasn't built to truck standard to begin with. So that's, yeah.
Yeah, I might say that what help the county is going to give them on this will be out of the road funds.
Okay. So that 1.7? Or
part of that, yes.
Yeah, the majority of the 1.7 is coming from the district, and then there is some coming from the county.
As I reviewed this, I thought it was an ideal project for impact mitigation money, because I know that is the main purpose, is to help those impacted areas. And where this is a high oil and gas traffic road, I mean adjusting the amounts maybe, but I think this is definitely a very good application if we just want to look at the amounts maybe.
So I'm going to invite, he probably wasn't prepared to do this, Flint, to come up. He did the financial analysis on this project, because I think we're really getting down to the discussion of the grant loan mix type of information. So he has, if you want to come up to the microphone, Flint, actually, and talk through the financial analysis, what you look at, what your metrics say, you know, as far as the ability of the organization to bring on debt.
Sure thing. So just as a reminder to the board, this is the loan repayment tool that we put together for almost every application. You can find this in your board docs under the name. Yeah, financial analysis.
Right.
Yeah, so you'll have a PDF copy. So what we look at are a few financial indicators used in municipal finance. We take the information off the U.S. Census as well as the financial information that every applicant is required, or every entity is submitted, required to submit to the state auditor's office. So if you go to the second page of your PDF, we'll have the applicant financial indicators. And so this is, we look at the economy, finances, and debt structure according to those financial statements that are submitted to the auditor. So again, according to the information provided, these don't necessarily tell you what decision to make. They're just, you know, information to help prompt questions, and there can be some clarification from the entity because the, you know, the data doesn't always tell the full story. But according to the debt schedule included in the financial statements, it appears that the applicant or the special service district is able to pay off 42% of its debt in the next 5 years, 85% in the next 10 years. The industry standard for good borrower is to pay off 25% in 5 years and 50% in 10 years. So we can see that this applicant is quite a bit above that, and that amounts to approximately $4 million a year. And you can certainly clarify that if that's not, you know, if the story's changed from that. So anything else that you would like to hear, Mr. Chairman?
Let me just go to the board if you have any questions on this analysis. So what you're trying to tell us is green means ability to take loan.
Sure. Yes, green means good, red means bad.
Okay, from a debt perspective.
Yeah.
Okay.
Could we, Flynn, can you put the map of this road on the screen so public and us to know? Oh, I'm sorry, Brenda. Because individual iPads are kind of going slow. Everybody's just hugging the Wi-Fi. Okay. Here you go, thank you.
Those of you that can get on.
I make a motion we go back to paper.
Oh, no.
Can I just interject? Can you imagine 35 of these?
Yeah.
I need to borrow that. Mine's not working.
Yeah, we don't.
I sent you paper. I sent you a can't get to it.
Okay, so that's the map we have up right now. The
The
red area represents the beginning and end of this, the Lake Borum Road project, right? So
yeah,
that's what you're looking at. Yes, Treasurer Damshin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question back on the applicant financial indicators page. The feedback is horrible. I don't know if anyone else is bothered by that, but I'll try to not create any of my own. Well, under the appropriate debt amortization, you're saying that industry standard is indicates an ability to retire all debt, or 25% of all debt in 5 years, 50% within 10.
Yeah, that's right.
And so what you would imply then is that borrowings could be extended further, or the amortization should be longer? Is that what the implication
is?
Yeah,
it's indicating that it may be appropriate for the applicant to take on more debt without creating a debt burden on both its finances and the residents within it, the taxpayers.
Yeah, that's how I understood it. I would just make a brief comment, Mr. Chair. The reason that Utah has a AAA bond rating, and the reason that most of our local governments have strong credit and strong bond ratings, is because we keep short amortizations that limits your exposure to excessive interest costs. And so I understand the implication, but I wouldn't want any of us to get into the business of thinking, oh, let's just stretch it longer, because that's actually not necessarily a healthy fiscal approach. And we should be careful when we're looking at industry standards. If you're looking at a national average or standard, you're looking at states that are not AAA rated and local municipalities that are not as conservatively managed as we generally are in Utah.
And we don't want to step too far onto that slippery slope of extending our debt and long amortizations, because that's getting away from what has put us in the very strong and enviable position that we are as a state. For decades, those conservative practices are why we're as strong as we are. We don't want to get away from that too much. So I think we should be mindful of that when we look at these comparisons to industry norms and averages. That's my only comment. Thank you.
All right. Yes, Mr. Zanotti.
Well, I'm going to be the Mr. Scrooge for the Christmas. If nobody's going to be brave enough to make any recommendation, I think we should raise, Roger, with your permission and your blessing, raise the loan amount to $1 million and interest at 2.5% to be in compliance with other projects we've done in the past and to have the money to spend for the rest of the year. I'm out, I guess.
Okay, so the motion is a $1 million 15-year loan at 2.5%, and that would make the grant $2,837,000.
That's correct.
That motion is in order. Is there a second to that motion?
I'll second.
A second from Mr. Galecki. Further discussion? Yes, Mr. Winterton.
Comment. This is a mineral producing county. They qualify for 0% interest. I think you're actually burdening the people that actually are bringing money to this board at 2.5%. I mean, you're penalizing it. I mean, we try to go to the industry and get them help us build these roads, but they're being taxed on all sides. And then when we ask for help, you know, not only do they contribute here, but now we're asking them to help build the road besides that. And so I think that's the same thing on the principle of 2.5%. I don't like it for mineral producing counties that are contributing to this board.
Do you like to offer a substitute, or
I'd go along with the motion, except change it to 0% interest.
So a substitute motion to have a $2,837,000 grant and a $1 million 15-year loan at 0%.
I would second that.
And a second from Mayor Norton. Any further discussion to the substitute motion?
Yeah,
Mr. Glucky.
I like reducing the rate on that. However, can we take it? We have to have it at 1% to get it out of the bonus fund. Is that correct?
We've had a lot of discussion over this particular topic, and I think we do need to do some loans out of the mineral lease anyway. So I think that's important. We do have the ability to do that, even if we can't do it out of the bonus fund. We do want to start spending money out of the bonus account, and we'll determine. In fact, probably by February, we'll have a good determination of how we're going to consistently apply the standard that is that we need to meet on the bonus fund. So we'll know by our funding meeting in February whether we can take it out of the bonus money or the mineral lease account. Either way, we have money to do a loan out of either account.
Mr. Chairman, just a point of clarification. Are the producing counties getting off the top money first and then remaining comes before the board to distribute it? Clarify how much they're getting right off the top?
The counties get 40% of what gets produced within their jurisdiction.
And then whatever the remaining comes before the board, so the board has to make a decision.
The board gets 32.5% plus some other remainder, if there is remainder, after other calculations.
Other calculations, yes. So there are some money already county is receiving, the producing counties.
And this is what they're pledging as the revenue source to repay the loan, is some of the mineral lease revenues that they're getting.
But you have to understand, this area that they're drilling in right now brings zero to this board, because it's not on federal land. And so we've encouraged them to get back on federal land to help us build this account back up. And we just had a meeting last week with one of the producers.
So we need to get some kind of background from the board for us to know what kind of decision we're making, because we don't have that privy to the issues.
We just take for granted everybody remembers that. But
we don't. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if it helps, we do have a list that can be produced on where the how the 40% gets distributed. It goes to UDOT, and then it gets distributed according to the county's prioritization within their special service districts. So we can have that available.
It will be odd because we don't. Most of us come into these boards. We don't have any backgrounds, obviously. And we make a decision based on what was provided today at this setting and not too much time for study.
Okay. So we can have that available at the February meeting. Further discussions to that motion?
So I will withdraw my motion and go with...
Okay, well, the substitute motion is in order. If there are no further questions, the substitute motion before us is a $2,837,000 grant and a $1 million 15-year loan at 0%.
Could I make a motion on that? Could you take 1% on this just so we can get some revenue coming back in a little bit?
Is that a question to the applicant or substitute?
Is that something we can... Just so we can generate a little bit of revenue somehow.
Yes. The applicant want to respond to that?
I mean, nobody wants to pay interest. But if we can stay at zero, that would help us to maybe do more along the way.
I cannot hear that.
I say if we could keep it at 0% interest, nobody wants to pay interest if you don't have to, but it would help us along the line to use our money for more roads in the county.
In your comment, or do you have another?
Well, I just I'd put that in a motion, but I'm probably not going to get any left on that.
Okay, with that, the substitute motion is in order and before us. Just to restate that again, that's a $2,837,000 grant and a $1 million 15-year loan at 0%. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
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 Are there any opposed? Okay, that motion carries unanimously. That will be placed on the priority list and discussed at the February funding meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's see, looks like our next project is Neola.
Can you get on?
Yeah, we'll invite them up to the table at this time. We'll turn some time over to Candace for a staff briefing on this project.
Neola Community Park District is submitting an application for funding to this board for a new tennis/basketball court. They are requesting $75,000 in grant from the board, and they are contributing $25,000 in applicant cash. This is for installing a standard-sized tennis court basketball court, a 10-foot-tall perimeter fence, and adjacent parking area along the south side, which will be used by the nearby pavilion at the park. What it includes is a concrete slab for $58,000, fencing for $17,000, and surfacing net posts and lines for $8,500. They've indicated that the Courts Unlimited contractor was highly recommended by multiple sources, and they have chosen to go with them for this bid. Their annual revenue from taxes is less than they need to complete the task in a timely manner. The minutes express that the public is really in favor of this project. So my suggestion to the board is, can the public also contribute to this want?
Do you want to introduce yourself to the board and maybe speak to your application?
Red or green? Am I on?
Green.
I have a cold, and this inversion is not helping, so I apologize. It's not as bad in the basin. My name is Cynthia Olean. I am the treasurer of the Neola Community Park. Okay. We were anticipating to be on that schedule in February, so that's why I am by myself today. The others could not schedule time to be here.
Anything you want to add to the public support of this project or what your community feels about it?
Absolutely. Have any of you been to Neola? It's about 15 minutes north of Roosevelt. We're very rural. So to go to the store, go to junior high or high school, go anywhere besides, you know, the park or church or elementary school, we have to drive quite a distance. So to add to our beautiful park, if you've been to our park, you can, in the last 11 years, we've made significant improvements, and it is a beautiful place that is used by a lot of people in the basin, not just our little community. We have a rodeo arena that is for public use. That's pretty much the only public use arena that is available in the basin. We've got Western Park in Vernal that costs quite a bit of money to use, and then Duchesne County or Duchesne City has one now too that also has to be charged to be used. And so we have an arena, two arenas that can be used by the public with very minimal cost. And so people from all over the place use our community park, and it is a beautiful facility. We want to add more to it. And because it is rural, we just, you know, we want more activities to for our community to be able to use.
Okay, we'll go to the board for questions on this project. Yes, Commissioner Lytle, and welcome.
Pardon me for being late. I did a Good Samaritan thing on bad icy roads, and it turned out just fine, but luckily it wasn't me that was upside down in the ditch. I'm very supportive, first of all, of the plan, but I'm also have children and everybody else that uses that park, and especially in the 12 or 15 years that I haven't been there, the change is noticeable, and very good work.
Thank you.
One question for me in terms of the packet and the different things that are here. In your public hearings, what was the response or your public meetings?
They're very, very favorable. We don't have a huge turnout on any of our meetings or hearings, but the ones that...
So that person that showed up was very favorable.
Very favorable, yes. I do have 6 or 7 letters from community members that really are pushing and would love to have this in our community, and I could probably get many, many more if I asked. Everyone I've talked to has been ecstatic about it, especially where we want basketball bankers on both sides so that can be used for those that don't know how to play tennis but can have that basketball opportunity as well. Our 4th of July celebration, I don't know if any of you have been there. It is a huge celebration, and we do a 5K, a half marathon. There's a volleyball tournament. So putting a tennis court on there will also, and basketball court could be used for different tournaments and different activities we have on that celebration as well. So we have a huge response of excitement when we brought this up to our community members.
Was Grizz in favor of it?
Yes. Grizz is my husband, yes. And the park actually literally is our backyard, so it's nice to see, like I said, in the last 11 years since I've lived there, it gone from dirt road, very, you know, one pavilion, a little tiny playground, to two pavilions, two parks, the sand volleyball courts, a grandstand in the arena that we used CIB funds for before I got on the board. You know, I mean, it's just a beautiful place. So, yeah, it's nice to have it be beautiful and be used a lot. We do use it a lot.
Mr. Glucky.
How is the $25,000 matching funds, how is that generated?
By property taxes.
Okay. Coming from rural Utah?
Yes.
And actually us for a number of years trying to create a park, in Source Park with a tennis court and such. I acknowledge what it does for the kids and the community and everything like that. I guess my question is that if you kept your, what I'm considering as a motion is letting them keep their $25,000 and doing a $100,000 loan at 1% for 20 years. Would you be able to generate that $5,000 a year, do you think, with the...
Our one concern in doing a loan is, from our understanding, and I'm not hugely knowledgeable on this, but on the bonding part of it, we had heard that there was a change in the bonding where if we were to get a loan from you and it needed to be bonded, that's more expensive for us to take a loan out. So if you could clarify that for me, if it was a loan that we could get without having to bond on our part to make that additional fee, but it, where it needed to be bonded, it sounded like it was more expensive and would not be feasible.
We'll go to our counsel, Mr. Roberts, on this.
A loan that a public entity enters into is called a bond. So anytime a public entity borrows money, that is a bond. Generally speaking, a public entity, if it's going to borrow money and sell a bond, it either has to have voter approval for a general obligation bond, or it's got to have a dedicated revenue source, which they can then pledge to pay that. Those are the only two ways you can do a bond. Neola Community Park, I think it's a district, right? It's not the city. It doesn't have taxing authority, so general obligation. I thought it said in the.
They collect taxes.
We collect property.
They Neola taxes on them. Or the community park.
Park.
The rec district.
The Neola Recreation District.
Yeah, right.
Okay. So in order to have a bond, the general obligation bond, they would have to have an election. That election would occur, I guess, next November. I'm not sure when a special election would occur. The other alternative is revenue source, and I don't know if there's any dedicated revenue source.
Well, if it's a taxing entity, would that
be? If you pledge taxes, that is a general obligation bond. So you have to have some other revenue source, which this board would say, okay, we recognize that as a revenue source. We think that we deem that to be sufficient because you want all of your bonds to be sellable in the open market, commercially reasonable. So when you look at bonding, especially on low amounts, in addition to the attorney's fees and all that, you need to look at, is there a revenue source, or are we going to require these people to do a general obligation bond and have an election?
So is there an inherent cost? So if there's if it's a $100,000 loan, like we're speaking of, there's an inherent cost for creating that?
There's a bonding process that they have to go through. Notice, generally, bonding counsel is hired. The board has developed some generic, what we refer to as generic bonds to lower that cost. In theory, local counsel can do those rather than bond counsel. But frequently this board, when they make a loan bond, will add $5,000 or $10,000 for attorney's fees in order to do that process. And again, that part of that process would be figuring out if this is there a revenue source, is it legal, or conducting the election.
Yes, Mr. Zanotti.
I just would like to make a motion to accept the application as is.
I'll second that.
A motion by Mr. Zanotti to accept the application as presented. That is a $75,000 grant, correct?
Yes.
All right. And a second by Councilman Farrell. Any further discussion to that motion? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
Nay.
Mr. Galecki is opposed. Everybody else in favor? That motion carries. So that'll be placed on the priority list. We will be discussing that in the February funding meeting. So we'll see you at that time.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. Our next project on the list is Fruitland Special Service District Master Plan and GIS Map Update. We'll invite them to the table at this time. Turn the time over to Candace for a briefing on this project.
Fruitland Special Service District is presenting a funding request to the board of $25,000 to accommodate a master plan and GIS map update. It's pretty straightforward. They have their $25,000 cash match. It's for an accurate analysis of current water resources and facilities. It's just more of an overview of what the water system looks like and what structural issues there are. The master plan will also include elements required in Utah State Rule R309-511 for hydraulic modeling. So they're trying to get into compliance with what they have Comments in the public hearing indicated that the request would be for $40,000, and it's now $50,000. So I don't know if there needs to be an advisory public hearing or if the board is comfortable with the public thinking that there would be a $40,000 request.
Hey, do you want to introduce yourselves to the board?
Yes, Bonner Hardegree. I'm chairman of the Fruitland Special Service District Board of Trustees.
My colleague owns the mill. Somehow I turned it off. I think y'all heard.
Anything you want to add to the briefing on this project?
It's been about, are these working?
Yeah, yours is working.
Mike is not working.
It's been about 10 years since we've fully updated the master plan.
1999
was the last full one. And interestingly enough, over the past year, we've had a little bit of growth spurt out there. It won't sound like a lot to some people, but we normally budget for 5 to 6, 7 new installations, and we had 16 this year. So we have a little bit additional influx of cash that's available to us. We've held our rates and everything constant over the last few years, and the district is in good financial shape to do this. So we think it's an opportune time to spend a little bit of money from the district with some help from the CIB to help us update the master plan. We did a well project about 3 years ago that CIB helped support. We came in under budget on that, and it provides us with an additional water source for growth in our area. And so we think this is a good time to go ahead and update everything and get in full compliance and also bring us up to speed on what we can do looking forward in the future.
Okay, go to the board with any questions on this project.
Just one quick question. How long have you been on the board or the
me personally?
Yes,
6.5 years.
Okay. And this is a general question on plans. The last one was done in 1999. Do you think you utilized the plan at that time? Or up till now?
I can't really speak to that since it's been so long ago. What I would say is that as a board now, we would really like to have some up-to-date information.
Mr. Chair.
I had one more question.
Okay, yes, Mr. Glucky.
So the 6 or 7 County Infrastructure Coalition did a lot of the GIS work. Is that, have they utilized, existing resources like that in other places that are within the state?
I don't know the plan.
I'm not sure I followed the question, Greg. I'm sorry. Will you?
Sure. Is it 6 or 7 county?
7 county.
Okay. There's 7.
There's 7.
Yeah. Okay. They've done a lot of work on GIS work as far as mapping and such. Will that work be incorporated into this study? Is there stuff available?
And I can speak to quite a bit of that. We've been involved with that coalition, as you may know. This particular district was not involved in that study. And the water modeling and the master plan update is all completely separate from what would ever been covered there. So.
Okay, Councilman Farrell.
Mr. Chairman, I was going to make the motion to go ahead and approve this application as it has been presented.
So, I'll second.
Okay, a motion to by Councilman Farrell to approve a $25,000 grant, and a second by Mayor Norton. Further discussion to that motion?
Just one question. Where is the source of the cash coming from?
We have surplus funds in the district already.
It's already there.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Other questions or discussion to this motion? Okay, all in favor of a $25,000 grant to Fruitland Special Service District for Master Plan GIS map update, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries unanimously. That is placed on the priority list for the February funding meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, on to Richfield City Sanitary Capital Facilities Plan. This is the meeting of plans. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of discussion. These are smaller dollar amounts than maybe our first project, but we'll turn the time over to Candace for the staff briefing on this, and then we'll go to the applicant.
Richfield City is presenting a sanitary capital facilities plan request for funding in the amount of $26,500. They do have their $26,500 cash match. It's to analyze the wastewater collection and treatment facilities to determine current and future capacity, system improvements and repairs. A sewer system evaluation and capacity assurance plan will also be completed as part of the overall study. The Division of Water Quality is supportive. These recommendations are based upon the following conditions. Authorization be conditioned upon the Division of Water Quality concurring with the engineering agreement and scope of work.
Want to introduce yourselves and add anything you want to that briefing?
Well, good morning. My name is David Ogden. I'm the mayor of Richfield City. I'm with the city manager, Matt Kramer, and Carson DeMille with Jones and DeMille Engineering. We appreciate the consideration for this funding. It is it's due for us to do a GIS study in our system for future planned growth. And so we're a very conservatively run city, and we do most of our own self-funding, but we need the help on this project, and we would like to have that be considered.
Go to the board for any questions on this application. Yes, Mr. Zanotti.
I just have a comment. Mayor Ogden, would you please convey my appreciation to your Michelle Jolly for the beautiful, detailed minutes. In 5 minutes, I know all about Richfield and all those years I've traveled through it. Thank you.
Thank you. Well,
she needs a promotion.
We got up early. I went out to feed my chickens, and they said, "What are you doing up so early?" But it was beautiful in Richfield, and I'm delighted to see the sun here. I want to thank you for serving on these boards. I've been just put into the Water Quality Board, and I'm looking forward to working with you, Mr. Glatke, and I work on the Juvenile Justice Systems Board, and I know it takes a lot of time, and I want to express appreciation for your time spent in working on these boards. And
yes, Commissioner Ogden.
I'd make a motion that we approve this application as presented to us.
Second. Motion. Oh, sorry.
Okay, so I think we'll give that to Commissioner Winterton on the second. So a motion by Commissioner Ogden to give a $26,500 grant to Richfield City, and a second from Commissioner Winterton. Further discussion to that motion? Seeing none, call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. You'll be on the priority list for the February funding meeting.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Judy, are you sure there's not a familiar conflict of interest in it?
Yeah. Could be. We're just removed a little bit.
Our next project is Castle Valley Special Service District. We'll invite them up to the table this time. Turn the time over to Candace for the staff briefing on this project.
Castle Valley Special Service District is presenting a funding request for their annual consolidated capital projects for 2018. The request is for $1,648,000, of which there is a $900,000 6-year, 2.5% loan, and a $748,000 grant. This project consists of street improvements, for various cities, drainage improvements for various cities, waterline replacement, engineering, and contingency. This is the project that Castle Valley Special Service District does due diligence on, research on. It is backed by a general obligation bond. This one is 2009. They're reaching the end of the bond, and they do their fiscal analysis of this and have come up with this being an appropriate request for the projects in entities represented by Castle Valley Special Service District. A statement on the public hearing. If you noticed, the district has utilized $10,751,003 of its 12.5 2009 GO bond. That leaves a remaining balance, and they're, you know, they do the best research and analysis for what they can afford, and this is a project that has been well thought out. That's my editorial.
You want to introduce yourselves to the board and speak to your application?
I'm Jacob Sharp. I'm the manager of the Castle Valley Special Service District. To my left,
Merrill Johansson with Johansson Total Engineering.
And you guys know Alex Buxton, Zions Bank Public Finance, a public finance advisor. Speaking of the project, appreciate your words, Candace. There's actually several new faces since I've been up here, but also some familiar faces. Glad to see we have submitted on a project like this every year since I've been the manager of this district. As Candace mentioned, our voters approved a 2009 general obligation bond. We are nearing the end of that. Each year we've come to the CIB and requested anywhere from, I think our smallest was maybe $700,000 loan, and our biggest maybe in the area of $1.7 or $1.8 million loan, and we've been very fortunate to get some grant money from the CIB to go along with that. We use that money to do various projects in 8 cities and towns in western Emory County, from street improvement projects to drainage projects, and also waterline and culinary water and sewer infrastructure replacement projects. So it's a whole combination of projects in all of the cities and towns that we represent.
Go to the board for any questions. Yes, Mr. Zanotti.
Jason, how are you doing?
Jacob, sorry.
You
bet.
Have you talked to UDOT people in any of those communities that you're doing the developments in them? Is it going to affect the right-of-ways of UDOT or any of the corridor preservation aspect of it?
We have Highway 10 that comes through the county. Okay. We do not do any projects on there. A lot of the times our cities will go to UDOT and get funding from them, and then the cities are able to, if the cities can, they match that funding and do projects on the highway right of way. Oftentimes we add that to our projects, to our contractors, but it's funded through UDOT and the cities.
But to your knowledge, none of these were going to be affected. Work you're doing.
Not in our application here. No.
And all these communities that you work in, they're all supportive of this project together.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, Mayor Norton. And then we'll go to Commissioner Winterton after that.
Sorry, I just had a question about engineering. If I'm looking at this correctly, the engineering total is $221,500 on a construction subtotal of $1.4 million roughly. That comes in about 15%, almost 16%. Is that typical?
We base that off on our past projects. It's usually around 15%. It covers all the design, construction, permits, and also the construction engineering for the inspection, the material testing, surveying, the preliminary surveying, as well as the construction surveying. So it covers the whole thing throughout the project to close out and administration.
That may be different than the previous application we had, but I know there was a question about it at 10%. This is almost 6% higher.
It's the 10% of theirs is based off the larger amount. The larger the amount, the lower your engineering cost will go, because you have more if you're basing it off percentages.
Thank you.
Commissioner Winterton? Are you still in order here? Sorry, I wasn't looking that way.
I was wanting to make a motion here.
Okay.
I enjoy seeing Jacob come in with these projects because they're organized, they've been screened, and financially they know where they are. And so I'd make the motion that we approve this as been presented with the $748,000 grant and 6-year, 2.5% loan for $900,000.
Second on the motion.
Okay, that's a motion by Commissioner Winterton and a second by Mr. Zanotti. Any further discussion to that motion?
Not to the motion, but I actually had, while Jacob was up here, I had a couple questions.
Okay.
So I see before Candace prefaced it that, you know, you have about $1.7 million left. Any guess how much longer that will last, do you think?
Well, assuming this is approved, so one more year. So next fall, I would anticipate to be back here with about this size of a funding package. It varies every year, but if this $900,000 is approved, I think it'll leave $800,000+ dollars there as far as the loan. We're very appreciative, and we've been fortunate to be able to leverage some grant money with that. We would come back then, that would be for 2019, the construction season that year, and then in that fall, the fall of 2019, November 2019, if our board, if it's their desire, then we'll go to the constituents for another general obligation bond and continue this.
Yeah, because this your types of applications have been here every year, and I think it's a unique package, so to speak. And I guess could you speak just briefly on it's unique in that how it's structured, but then also how you you have general obligation bond, which is kind of out of the norm. Can you speak to a little bit of the history of that? Is how it how they came together is getting the general obligation bond, this type of package.
I think somebody started this before I was there, and so I think they came up with it. It was a way to bring the community together. It was a way to leverage the tax dollar that the district gets. I think the most effective way. It does take a lot of mutual agreement between the cities and towns. Now we're on my board. We're represented by the 8 mayors. Of the cities and towns that I serve in, or they can designate a council person in their place if they don't want to sit on the board. There's also 3 at-large members that the county appoints, but every year we work with them. These projects are based off of 2009 capital facilities plan that was hand-in-hand with the general obligation bond, and I would anticipate that we would update our capital facilities plan also in 2019 and review where we're at and which, what we've got done, what we still anticipate needs to be done. So, we have board meetings every month, and it's just a kind of a combined community effort. A lot of our board members, if you were to attend, they speak about having to work together, allowing maybe one town to do some more projects in a given year than maybe another town, and knowing that their town will get more projects in another year when they need it. So just a combined community effort, and it's worked well, and hopefully it will continue to work that way.
Okay,
I think Alex wants to say something.
Well, I let me just add to that. I was part of the discussions back in 2009 when this great plan was put together and the capital facilities plan was put together, and at the time we were working with a gentleman named Daryl Leemaster, which some of you may know, Jacob's predecessor. And I think the whole idea behind the general obligation bond was to assure that the district throughout the entire plan would have sufficient revenues to repay the loans as they made their annual requests. And as you all know, the general obligation authority is the safest and best way to get that authorization because they have the unlimited taxing power through ad valorem property taxes to generate that revenue. And so they went out for that vote. They said, hey, let's let the voters decide if this is a project that they want to approve, and presented that $12.5 million at that time, and it was approved. And so it's worked really well over the last decade. And like Jacob mentioned, they'll be likely doing that here in the next couple of years again. So I think it was a very well thought out plan by the district all those many years ago. So.
Thanks. Any further discussion to that motion? The motion before us is a $748,000 grant and $900,000 loan, 6 years at 2.5%. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, that motion passes unanimously. That's on the priority list for February funding meeting. We'll see.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Let's go one more project here before we take a break. Spring City, we'll invite you up and turn the time over to Candace for the staff briefing on this project.
This project being presented by Spring City is for spring development, which is their water source, for redeveloping their mountain springs to increase the quantity. It will include exploration, excavation, removal of existing spring collection piping, site clearing, grubbing, all the associated items involved with the redevelopment of a spring, of the springs. In the public hearing, they spoke that five springs above Spring City Canyon have been losing water, and so this will be for the investigation of spring sources at Birch Spring. They will go into reviewing the collection source at the pipe to see what's causing the loss of water. They have permission from the State Department of Water Quality to do. They have to have permission from the State Department of Water Quality to do anything at the source. So my question would be, do they have that permission, or the board could admonish them to get that permission? Jones and DeMille engineering estimate of $74,005 to redo the one spring is has been indicated to be high. Another engineer has been asked to write up a proposal. I don't know if they have the current proposal. I believe they do. The Community Impact Fund Board will grant about $39,005 according to the public hearing, and this request is sufficiently higher than that. So I don't know if they need to have another public hearing that discusses the full amount of this, or if they already have, the applicant can speak to that. There were several issues that have occurred with this spring, and I will let the applicant speak to that, but their request is half grant, half loan. They do not have any applicant cash being contributed to this.
Okay, go to the applicant, introduce yourselves, and speak to your project.
I'm Jack Monette, Mayor of Spring City. I brought with me several others who are involved with the spring and trying to do the emergency funding for this. I have next to me Mr. Neil Sorensen, who is working with the board, specifically as a member of the council, city council, over water. And then we have those who have put together the actual application, and member Jones and DeMille here. So with that, I'm going to turn some time over to Mr. Sorensen to explain and answer, Candace, some of your questions.
The first part of the application that you've received there is, and one of the reasons that we took 18 months or 2 years to finally come to this decision of what we're doing, is that I didn't like the first scope of work that we looked at. And I've been familiar with the water system for over 39 years now and worked with Spring City Culinary System. And so we've watched these springs for a long time and kind of know the history of them. And one of the things that we've noticed over the last really 10 years, Jim Bennett and Kimberly Stewart are also with us, that the flow has continually decreased. And the water is coming up above on the surface of the spring collection areas and below in certain areas of the spring collection areas. So we felt like there was some issues with the collection system. We wanted permission to go in and dig into the collection system and see what was going on in there. And that's where we came up with the first engineering estimate and stuff. I was not happy with the amount to redo one spring. We have five springs up there. One is Prince Albert. There's different names for them. There's Prince Albert Spring, there's Burke Spring, and Mudhole Spring, and Upper and Lower Ox Spring. So we did some investigative work when they came back with a $73,000 estimate to do this work and said, no way. So we started looking at it. Jim Bennett took cameras and TVs, and we went inside the collection system and found there was tree roots and settlement in the collection area. So then we went back in with a high-pressure washer and tried washing out the roots and the sediment and trying to redevelop the springs ourselves to get them working and get the flows back up. And that really didn't work. And that was on the Birch that we tried that on?
Prince Albert.
Well, we actually did it on several of them after, but that was more for the research also to find out if we had problems with more than one. One thing, I did not want to keep coming back. We have five springs. I want to be here one time, do all five of them, be done with this. And so we did a lot of research to find out if they are all in the same situation, and we feel very confident they are. Another thing I'd like to address is we did, rather than putting our money right into the spring area, we've spent about $30,000 to $35,000 on improving one of our city wells. I figured that would be safer than putting it into a spring with the drought situations and stuff that we're in. So we put the money into the well. We really did not increase our flows from that well much at all. It was very disappointing. It's a closed aquifer or something like that, so it's only going to produce so much water. So we went, and also there's complications with a well. You have to provide power, you have pumps, you have fees and maintenance more. With the spring system, it's a free gravity flow system. And so we really feel like that we need to go in and redo our springs and get them up to par. We have had a couple different public hearings, maybe not specific to CIB. I know we've had one specific to this, but we've had another one speaking about grants and stuff, and we had 100% favorability of redoing the springs and the collection areas, and we had nobody opposed to it. We do have money set aside that we have not put into the grant application. We went to council last night, and we have between $60,000 and $80,000 that we are able to put into this project. And we're willing to do so. One of the things is we don't want to spend all the money and then not have anything for an emergency and to go forward. One of the reasons we're asking for part loan, part grant is we've raised our sewer rates in the last few years. We've raised our water rates, we've raised our power rates, and obviously the San Fe County property taxes has went up significant last year. So we didn't really feel like we can take all this on as just a loan. Our water systems are in debt already about $1.3 million. So I hope that, and I'm very open to questions or anything like that. So we'll try and answer anything that we possibly can.
Thank you. Let's go to the board for questions. All smiles. Okay, Councilman Farrell.
When was the last time these springs were reworked?
the last time I'm really familiar with it would have been in the late 80s. The late 80s, yes. And we did have an earthquake, I believe about 4 years ago we had one, and then we had one about 10 years ago. I'm not exactly sure on the years, but we noticed significant changes in our springs up our canyon. They actually, one of them we feel like has moved just a little bit. And when I say a little bit, upper and lower aux, and now it's coming out more down below. So hopefully when we redo these with some exploratory work and stuff, we can go in and hopefully recapture that water. Birch Spring is surfacing above now on the surface instead of going in the collection area. And Prince Albert is surfacing about 40 to 50 feet west of the spring box. So that's our goal.
If these springs are running at normal capacity, would it have enough water to meet all your needs?
Yes.
And you just use the well as a backup source?
Correct. Other than for when we're watering the cemetery. And then we still have to pump some, but yeah, it'll carry the town 95% of the time.
How far from town is these springs? What kind of line do you have running to it?
We have approximately 4 miles, Jim. Probably about 4 miles. We replaced the line in the late 90s going to the spring collection area.
It meets current standards in that line.
I would, yes.
It's an 8-inch line.
It is an 8-inch PVC line, yeah.
And these springs are on Forest Service property?
Yes, correct.
You have to get a permit from them to go in and...
We've already been working with the Forest Service. We have a right-of-way and a
spring protection zone?
Yes, okay. A protection. And there's really no problem to do maintenance work and repair. There is issues if we go off of our right-of-ways and stuff like that. So, but we are working with the Forest Service.
Do you have to treat this water in any way?
Normally we don't, no. We have a very wonderful water system. We do chlorinate maybe 1 day a month or 2 days a month sometimes, just when it's needed. But yeah, our water system's very good.
Mr. Glucky.
So I have a few questions. So you must have drawn the short straw with everybody here as far as being
there. I tried to get somebody else, but they won't.
Has this been on the capital improvement list?
Yes. And it is also, we went before San Pete County, the mayors and commissioners, and out of the 12 or 13 cities, we are number one on their local capital improvements for San Pete County.
And do you have a maintenance fund or a sinking fund, you know, for continuous repairs?
Yes. And in the sinking fund, we have approximately $34,000. Capital projects for water and sewer, we have approximately 60.
So that's sort of 60 to 80. 80,000 that you spoke of.
Correct.
Okay. You know, like you said, 70,000, you know, to replace one well. I see where you're coming from. I guess these couple of questions here are, do you have a procurement process as far as selecting contractors and such?
I'm sorry, can you come up to the microphone so we can get you on the recording?
This is Kimberly Stewart. She's a council.
Thank you.
We do have a procurement process in that before this project, the initial estimates were by Jones and DeMille, but we still have to put it out to bid for at least we need to do an RFP for at least three other engineering firms. So we need to have at least three bids that are before we can settle. So this Jones and DeMille was their estimate.
Okay, because things that stick out to me is it looks like, you know, $180 an hour for track hoe work, you know, $15,000. I assume this includes labor, but things like 300 cubic yards of compacted fill, that's quite a bit for, you know, for five springs. Yeah. So, I'd.
And again, I'd just like to reiterate to the board that this is redevelopment for all five springs, not just for the one spring.
I'll make a motion.
Oh,
sorry.
I had some questions.
Okay,
as well.
Let's go to the questions for Mayor Norton.
First one I had was, I don't know, I know when we've talked about water projects in the past, we've always talked to Division of Water Quality, I believe. Is there any input from them on this, or did I miss that in here?
It should be in your package.
There's a memo. I saw that, but I didn't really say anything about, are they able to help fund this, or is there...
Their Magi, with their request, is approximately 1.58%. The standard Magi is 1.75. If it's full loan, $420,000 on this, and it's in the memo, it would be 1.65%.
One of the things on our income for Spring City is a lot of the people we have in the town itself is retired and on a fixed income. And we have a lot of low-income people also. One of the things, in my opinion, that misconstrues this, the Magi, is that we have three or four multimillionaires that live there, and I think it really offsets what
the reality is.
Yes, and so we are in the process of working with Travis
Keel
from the six counties, and we're going to do our own income
survey
because we just don't feel like, you know, the majority of people that we work with don't have that kind of money.
Have you approached those multimillionaires to help you with the project?
Yes, we have.
I would.
We have.
They're closer.
Their water's in jeopardy, so.
Restrict the flow of the water, they will come forward.
Mayor Norton, you have some follow-up questions?
Sorry, I did. Remember, I'm still a rookie within my first year here. So one of the things I know we've talked a lot about is our rainbow sheet and how much money we give each community. And this one did stand out to me, that Sanpete, I believe this is in Sanpete County, correctly, that they have already received $12 million in grants, and they have put in $2.95 million, roughly. I know that there's different circumstances. I don't know the history on a lot of these projects, but just knowing that, I would be more apt to look to a loan, a full loan of the amount. The percentage rate, I don't know. Someone else can maybe kick in on that one. But I think I would look more to a loan for the full amount. And I did notice that one of their bonds was going to be paid off in 3 years. So I would even consider extending the first payment out to where that one was a $60,000 roughly dollar payment that would be paid off in 2020, I believe. So that's not a motion. I'm just kind of.
Well, if you can come
up
with the rate, you've got all the terms of a motion kind of formulated in your mind.
I might help her with
okay,
that.
Okay, Commissioner Winterton.
If you go back to the sheet and it shows the history, those loans that we have given to the county are 2.5% on anything that's loaned. They don't have any 0% there at all.
That.
So.
Okay, I guess that would be my motion then, if there's not further discussion, that we do full loan for the $419,000 on a 20-year at 2.5% with the payment not starting. Can we do it for 4, or does it have to be less than that? Years.
4 is about the max.
Max, because I think that other one was going to be paid off in 3, if I'm correct.
We have one that will be paid off in 3 years, and that will still leave us the $1.3 million in debt with the water system. Right. Some of the interest we're currently paying is 5%.
So, well, see, we're going to do it at 2.5.
I'm shooting if, you know, if Sam Pete's, oh, historically at 2.5, let's go with some 0. Set a new precedent, you know. Help us a little bit here.
Would you amend your motion to 3 or 4%?
Is there a way we can determine what the payment would be?
Yeah, I didn't see that sheet
yes.
in here.
It is.
It's moving slow. It's in there, but I can't bring it up.
Yeah.
Oh, I looked, and I must have missed it.
The payment on a $420,000 loan at 2.5%, 20 years. Oh, I don't have the payment in front of me. I do have what the monthly average water rate is, $49.76 under the proposed under their proposal, and it would be $53.35. So it would be, for the average water user, it would be a monthly bill of less than $4 increase. I know that. That I did find. So do you have the payment amount?
I don't, Mike. Sorry.
$26,942, that's an annual payment amount.
At
20
years
of
2.5%.
Well, I may be looking at this too simplistically, but if they're retiring a $62,000 debt, 20-something thousand is not even half of that they would be picking up.
Okay, so motion is a $419,000 loan, 20 years, 2.5%, deferred for 4 years?
Start in 4 years.
Okay, deferred for 4 years.
I'll second that.
And there is a second from Councilman Farrell. So the motion maker was Mayor Norton, second by Councilman Farrell. Further discussion of this motion, Mr. Commissioner Lytle.
So with that in mind, that would put your bill up to $53.35, if I see that correctly. Would the percent still be under the Magi, recognizing the Magi's question?
Right. I'll go to our council. Tom.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In your application, you indicate that the repayment would be pursuant to a general obligation bond.
Correct.
And that's 60?
No, that's on this project.
Okay.
Have they had the vote of the
public? Do you have sufficient general obligation authority to go up to the 420?
We changed it to a revenue bond.
Okay. So a revenue bond from the Premier Water System?
Yes.
And I did see that's the one that will be being paid off, I believe. No, excuse me. It is a water revenue bond.
Okay. Further discussion of that motion?
I'd like to make a substitute motion.
Okay.
That seems a little bit high. You know, a couple of things, they've already put money into it. They've, you know, it's a small community, and I would just change the rate to 1%.
So the substitute motion is $419,000 loan, 20 years, at 1%, deferred for 4 years. Is that correct?
And I'll second that.
There's a second from Treasurer Dampson. He beat you. Sorry, Commissioner. Further discussion to that motion? All right, that motion is in order. So the substitute motion is a $419,000 20-year loan at 1% deferred for 4 years. All in favor of that substitute motion, raise your hand. So this is the substitute motion. Okay.
Greg, Sonia, Steve.
Read it in, please.
Okay. Mr. Galecki in favor, Mayor Norton, Councilman Farrell, Mr. Zanotti, Treasurer Dampson, Commissioner Lytle, and Commissioner Ogden, all in favor. Opposed to that motion? Commissioner Winterton. That motion does pass. So that will be placed on the priority list for our February funding meeting. And we will see you then.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Very much. Appreciate your time.
Take a 10-minute break, and we'll be back at 10:20 to deal with the rest of the agenda.
If he thought it was going to be a majority, no.
To place the project on the pending list because
Harbin County was not in attendance. What it consists of is purchasing two county fire trucks, a Pierce Saver rescue body truck and a Rosenbauer truck. These will be placed in Wellington and Helper City fire departments. Their request is for $1 million grant from CIB. There is applicant cash of $100,000, so the total project or costs of these two new fire trucks is $1,100,000. There is a blue sheet in your board docs that you might look at of past funding.
It's called Fire Truck Blue Sheet.
Fire Truck Blue Sheet.
On the board docs.
And it is kind of colored blue in there. It has been, it's backed by popular request. The board wanted to know what they do previously on projects such as this. And so if you want to look at that, you can see the various ways it was funded. Oftentimes it requires, or the board will give grants, but the applicant may usually contribute half of what the cost of the fire trucks are. But you can look at that. We'll let Carbon make their request and tell us a little bit more about these fire trucks, where they'll be placed, and if there are any fire trucks being retired and what they will do with those.
Okay. If you want to introduce yourselves and then tell us about your project.
Casey Holmes, Carbon County Commission.
Matt Perea, Fire Chief, Wellington City.
Thanks for presenting us this opportunity. I apologize for not being here at the last meeting. I don't know whether to apologize or say you're welcome for having a shorter meeting because we weren't at the last one. But we apologize for not being at the last one. Somehow it got wrapped up in some other stuff and forgot. I apologize. This just a little bit of background history on this. This at the beginning of this year, we renegotiated our fire contracts with our cities, which allows us to continue paying the cities for our fire contracts. They handle all of out county fire suppression, and in that contract, we did set up a fund that we will pay the cities what we have been paying, but it will also set up a fund that they can start building surplus for apparatus, equipment, and or fire trucks. So we have a plan in place to start building up a better fire equipment and trucks and funding programs for these types of requests. But right now the need is that Wellington has a fire truck that is, it was a refurb when they bought it, so it was wrecked, refurbished, they bought it. It does have some problems. And then the other one is the one from Helper, and it too has some problems. The benefit for Carbon County is we do have some oil coming from the basin over to Carbon County, and these fire departments are our main line in helping to cover those areas. Wellington has two loadout facilities in its jurisdiction, oil loadout facilities. One is Price River Terminal, and the other one is run and operated by Savage.
Okay, we'll go to the board for any questions on this project.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Zanotti.
Following Candace's remarks, I've reviewed the last 2 years of the funding for the fire trucks. If you over the 100% loan, the rest on was just a 50-50 loan and grant, 2.5% loan. So that was my review study that we have done for the last 2 years.
So is that a motion or is it just...
Could be a motion, yes. I could make a motion, that's fine. If you're willing to do that, then yes, 50-50, 2.5% for 3 years.
Okay.
How many?
30.
30 is not is a little longer than the life of a.
Okay, 15. I'm negotiable.
I'll second
that. All right. There is a motion from Mr. Zanotti for a $500,000 grant and a $500,000 loan, 15 years, 2.5%. Is that correct?
Yes, please.
And that's seconded by Mr. Galecki. Further discussion to that motion? Maybe I'll ask the applicant to maybe comment on that. What Mr. Zanotti is suggesting is really in line with what we've done with projects of a similar nature. This is a large purchase, so maybe you can kind of speak to the ability to service that debt as opposed to a grant.
Currently, I don't know that the county would be able to or at this time be. I think we'd have to go back and look at the numbers and see if we could service a debt. I would have to take that back to the county and talk about it. I think that would be more of a difficult lift. We may end up having to save up for a few more years if that's the case to come up with a 50-50 match and put this together.
Okay, so. This would be placed on even whatever motion gets approved, we'd be on the priority list, so it won't be funded until February anyway, so that would give you some time to go back and kind of determine your answers to those questions.
Okay.
That's an option out there. Any further discussion to this motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. So that will be placed on the priority list for the February funding meeting. That is a $500,000 grant, $500,000 loan, 15 years, 2.5%.
Thank you.
And we'll see you in February. Thanks. Next item on the pending list is North Logan City. All right, we'll invite them up to the table this time. We'll go to Candace for a staff briefing on this this project.
North Logan City is coming back to the board for reconsideration of their original request of a $40,000 grant, which they presented with lots of other funding sources coming in, and it was for a study. It consists of evaluating city culinary water and storm systems, demographic projections, land use, current, and future water demands. Now, at the time when they brought this application forward, the board had voted to provide the funding as a $180,000 loan. There is no revenue source for a study, and of course, North Logan City was considering what to do with that, and they were contacted to see if they wanted to come in and discuss it for reconsideration. They were encouraged to do so. They're here to discuss the consideration of a $40,000 grant. They have the applicant cash for the, I believe the original study was $169,000, and so there were four cities that were also contributing and other sources of funding. That is what is before the board today. They're coming off the pending list, which I believe is reasonable. The board could choose to do what the applicant has requested, but I will leave that up to the board.
Okay, why don't you introduce yourselves again and anything you want to add to what Candace suggested.
Alan Luce, North Logan City Administrator.
And I'm Zan Murray with JEB Engineers.
Okay, thank you.
And I'd just like to add that we appreciate this opportunity to come and talk with the board about this pending project. Just a brief rundown, what this study mainly is looking at is optimizing our systems, our culinary water systems, by providing pressurized irrigation through secondary water. This has the potential to open up the stormwater channels to be used as detention basins to help with flooding. We have a considerable amount of flooding potential in Cache Valley. I think you've seen that this past year. And then the third component is also the trail benefit that's associated with this. I think you're familiar with the project, though, and I don't know if you have any other questions regarding that.
Well, let's go to the board for discussion. If I recall correctly, Candace, we had put this on a priority list, but it never got dealt with at the funding meeting. We had approved in the prior meeting a $180,000 10-year loan at 0%. Is that
That's right?
Okay. So, questions from the board. Yes, Mr. Zanotti.
Alan, the sources of your cash, applicant cash, local cash, and federal grant. Can you explain a little bit where they're coming from?
Is the local cash or the match from the contributing entities or the cities? Would come from stormwater user rates and also water user rates. I know that's the case in particular for North Logan City. The grant, the federal grant, is from the Bureau of Reclamation for $25,000. And then what we're requesting is the $40,000. The total cost for the project is $169,000. But that's where those particular funds are coming from, or the matches that we have.
And they're already accumulated in the account? The grant has been given to you by the federal?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, Mayor Norton.
If I remember right, the reason we went 180 was because they would have to bond. I mean, yes, because it was a loan, they would have to bond, and we were including those costs. If I remember correctly.
That's right.
But if they have $25,000 as a grant, would they still need that full amount, is my question. Wouldn't we be able to subtract $25,000 from that?
Question also to that. Help me understand in simple terms what your request is, Gail.
Yeah, thank you.
$40,000 grant.
The $40,000 grant.
That's all they want.
Are you accepting the $169,000 on top of that, or independent?
No.
This is changed.
It's all changed. Don't want it.
I'll refresh our memories here. When we discussed this,
I was trying to figure out which is.
Yeah, and you weren't even a board member this time, I think, when we did this project, but it was. We took their application, we added in all these things, including the bonding costs, and came up with a figure of a loan. So I think it really boils down to a discussion about, a couple things are at play. One, do we do loans on plans? Typically, we have never done that, so this would be out of the norm. The second thing that came up is, do we do a loan for anything under $100,000? Typically, no, we haven't done those things. So with those things in mind, those were some of the philosophical discussions at play when this project was considered, and I've heard some feedback from some of the communities, and I'm wondering myself, why we would either do one or two things in my mind. We would either deny the project or we would fund it as a grant, because I mean, putting it into a loan product, just, it really doesn't follow with what we've done. It really doesn't make a lot of sense in my mind. But we did approve a loan back then. We're back here to consider this time kind of the original request and maybe have a further discussion about it. So that's kind of the groundwork behind it. Yes, Mayor Norton.
I think the reason we looked at it that way is because they are a non-producing county. And I'm all for helping communities and counties, but where they're non-producing, I think if we did a loan at 0%, that is helping that community. That's why I feel like doing a loan would be the correct thing to do in this case. At 0%, I think that's a pretty good deal. And I would say, though, that if they don't need the 180, we could reduce it to possibly 150, 155 if they're still getting that grant.
Well, there's bonding costs, so you're going to add cost to the project just by doing a loan. So I don't know if that's much help to the community. Because that doesn't, I mean, that just increases the cost of the project. They'll be paying it out of the same source of public funds. You know, if you look at the Rainbow Sheet, I think this is an important note to talk about. And again, this goes to a whole philosophical discussion that the board should probably have in the future. But it is true, cash, if you look on your Rainbow Sheet, cash county, zero CIB revenue for the last 5 years. And they've gotten $11 million plus in awards, almost all of it in loan. But you can also look, I mean, there's very few counties that you could say they're producing to the level of awards they're getting. I mean, you could say that almost about every county. I mean, even Duchesne County, which is one of our top producers now, has received over $60 million above and beyond the revenue that they produce. So, I mean, it's certainly worthy of discussion. I mean, it is a zero revenue producer in the last 5 years. So, I mean, this is why, to me, we're either discussing a denial or whether we're going to support this. The other thing I want to point out is we have a loan bucket out there of $46 million that nobody's taking right now. And we're going to hear, and we certainly dealt with some of the, you know, the high mineral producers, and they're getting the 0% loans. They're really not subtracting out of that bucket. So if they're not going to take out of that loan bucket, who is? And to me, it's if mineral producing counties are going to be taking 0% loans, which is fine. I mean, if that's what the board wants to do, certainly able to do that. But that's not drawing down out of that bonus bucket. So if they're not going to take those at 2.5% or whatever the prevailing rate is, somebody does. So if we're not dealing with producing counties doing that, we're really talking about less producing or non-producing counties doing that. Right. So, you know, I think there is a spot for it at our interest rate, because I think that's the appropriate thing to do for a non-producer. But, I mean, we're talking about a study and $40,000. I mean, if we were talking about a $2 million project, we would be having a very different discussion about interest rates and taking all loan and those types of things. But this is why I'm kind of in the deny or approve their request rather than deal with the loan product, because that's so far outside of our norm, and I don't think it really, there's no revenue source. It really doesn't add to the benefit of the community, but there's my philosophical rant on it.
They did have that $25,000 federal grant, which was from the Bureau of Reclamation. Again, it's probably in the packet, but did the Division of Water Quality have any, do they do anything with plans?
You want to comment on that, Lisa?
Division of Drinking Water.
Sorry.
I feel like I weighed in on this project when it was.
You probably did.
First.
Can you step up to the mic? I'm sorry, but this just makes it easier for us to reproduce the minutes and get everything recorded properly.
So looking at it now, it's a little bit different. So what would you like me to weigh in on?
Well, I guess where it's a water project, mm-hmm. is there any contribution that you guys can give or help with them?
Well, they did not come to the Division of Drinking Water for a planning advance or a grant. So we weighed in on the merits of the drinking water component of the project, which we're supportive of.
I guess along those, you mentioned two things, a grant or an advance.
Yes.
Can you?
Well, typically with the program we administer, we look at planning as sort of the promotion, marketing aspect, because that's where projects get identified. So those loan projects that you can lend at 2.5% are typically come from good quality planning projects. So that's why we typically advance or grant the money.
So you could possibly do that with this project? Is that what you're saying?
We would probably need them to parse out just the drinking water component, because that's the only elements that would be eligible for our funding, whereas CIB can sort of lump it all together and have a bigger picture, sort of.
Well, I don't know how that would all break down. It would be interesting to know what the water, culinary water side of that would be. Do you have any idea what that portion is?
If I could comment to that. One of the major considerations with regard to the culinary water part of this is actually considering pressure irrigation. and determining whether that's a value to the three communities. A planning advance would be an advance or a grant from the Division of Drinking Water, if I understand correctly, that would be repaid if a drinking water project was done as a result of the study. While there may be, there's already plans in place for the communities to have drinking water projects done, this study looks at alternative ways other than drinking water projects to better use the water resources in Cache Valley. So we could get a planning advance from the Division of Drinking Water, but knowing that the outcomes are largely potentially pressure irrigation, the funding doesn't construe or work well that way, if I could say that. So that was just my one comment as to where that would go. The other portion is the stormwater component as well. Wouldn't be funded, as you'd mentioned, from the Division of Drinking Water.
Keith, you have a comment?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate you guys making the trip down from Cache County. Went from one smog pot to another, I suspect. Source is a little different, though. I think it would might add some clarity on this if we stepped back from this particular project and looked at the history and the philosophy of what we're trying to accomplish. Projects like this that are doing these feasibility studies or basic planning are ones that we have traditionally looked at and funded on a match basis. So if the community has their 50% plus skin in the game, we will match the 50% to make up that gap. So talking the specifics of this project, obviously they have that in spades. So I think the board needs to ask themselves, are we going to support doing this type of work that leads to quality projects, or are we not going to support this type of work? You know, having lengthy discussions every time a project like this comes in over, you know, $25,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 really isn't in anyone's best interest. You know, we talk about $1 million fire truck in 2 minutes, yeah. And then we spend, you know, an hour talking about this type of thing. But again, philosophically, I think we need to revisit it from time to time. And again, historically, we've supported these types of projects throughout rural Utah, regardless of whether they're producing or non-producing. The amounts are very small, but the dividends are very high. And something that John alluded to is that in a Cache County or a Washington County, places that aren't big contributors, the philosophy has been, we give you a few tens of thousands of dollars, and then you come back and request a loan at 2.5% interest, which puts money back into the fund, which helps us fund smaller communities in central Utah or in eastern Utah, where they don't have the ability to take a 2.5% loan, and yet they need the help. So, again, as we look at this from a historical perspective, that's how we've looked at it. That, you know, as Candace likes to say, the statute says that this fund is for the benefit of all Utahns. You know, we've interpreted that of all rural Utahns. We've tried to stay out of the Wasatch Front, but we've got a lot of money to loan, and if we're not going to loan it in eastern Utah, we can't loan it in other places in Utah, like central Utah or southern Utah, because they can't afford it. How are we going to get that loan money out? And places like Washington and Cache, where we've traditionally got out large loan funds on these big water and sewer projects, you know, and so that's been the history, that's been the philosophy. And I think, again, to get caught up in the specifics of any one project may be a little misguided. It's, are we going to stick with the philosophy that we've always had, or are we looking to change that and make this a producer, non-producer type thing? And, you know, that's a decision for the board, but that's the history of it. So I've said enough. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Mr. Ogden.
Jonathan, I'd make a motion that we approve this application as presented. I look at it, it is a planning mechanism for this, for the northern communities up there, and they're bringing a lot of money to the plate, so I would make that as a motion.
Okay, the motion on the table is to approve a $40,000 grant. Correct, Commissioner Ogden?
Yes.
And a second from Commissioner Lytle. Yes, I saw that out of the corner of my eye. Further discussion to that motion?
I just have a comment for Mr. Heaton's suggestion about Washington County is not producing. Almost every one of you have a vacation home in Washington County. And we give you fresh air and sunshine 4 months a year.
It's not bad, you're
just as a housekeeping thing, do we have to rescind the motion that was made, original motion made in October?
No.
Okay, so I'm seeing no. So all in favor of the $40,000 grant to North Logan City, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, that motion carries unanimously. That will be on the February priority list for the funding meeting.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, we have an item for special consideration. This is, we need to have a vote to put this on the agenda. This is for Johnson Water Improvement District. Is there a motion? So moved by Councilman Farrell, and a second from Mr. Zanotti to place this item of special consideration on the for consideration. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so we'll invite them up to the table at this time. We'll turn some time over to Candace for a staff briefing on this request.
Johnson Water received some funding prior to this meeting, and it was to do, you can see that their prior description consists of water system improvements. This is what the original funding was for, on along Highway 40 from 6250 south to Full Line Road. And it was part of a UDOT paving project. It, as it turns out, UDOT participated a little bit more in this project, and they were able to utilize the product of UDOT, and there was funding left over. The original funding was half their funding and half CIB grant. There is money left over, and you can see that the proposed change of scope is to include five particular items. It's of a similar nature, but they want to use the rest of the funding, so they're not requesting any additional funding from the board. It's to utilize the rest of the funding for a similar extended project in those five locations. Did I get that correct?
Yeah.
So it is up to the board to allow them to use that because it is a change of scope. It wasn't what the board originally authorized the funding for. It is similar. And with that, I will turn the time over to Chairman Hardy.
And I am going to disclose that I'm actually related to Dick Taylor. He's my wife's uncle. So I'm going to turn the time over to Keith to manage the discussion on this particular project and recuse myself from the discussion.
We won't hold that against you.
What are you talking about holding against him? It's to his credit.
You're crediting his, you're improving his credibility.
Yeah, exactly. His estimation just went up. Well, thank you. What a pleasant surprise. Gentlemen, if you'll please introduce yourselves to the record and tell us a little bit about the request.
I'm Dixon Taylor. I'm the manager of Johnson Water District.
Dallas Murray, and I'm chairman of the Johnson Water Board of Trustees.
We appreciate the opportunity to be here this morning. As Candace mentioned, this is a change of scope. We were able to discover ways we could get UDOT to pay for a lot more than what we originally anticipated. And we actually used their construction crews, so we saved a lot on mobilization and on traffic control, and we saved a lot of costs. We got a lot done with the money that we did use. We wanted to use the remaining money on some of the things that are on our priority, on our capital improvement list, and some of these kind of tie into the Highway 40 project as well, because we upgraded our line on the north side of Highway 40 from a 6 to an 8, and so now we have a one spot. We've got a constriction of a 6-inch line that needs to be upgraded to an 8, so it's a continuous 8-inch line. So it's kind of related to the Highway 40 project. The other one is we're upgrading one that's about 2 miles away. It was put in the 70s and 80s. it goes from a 4-inch line to a 6-inch line to an 8-inch line, so obviously we can't have fire flow. So we just replace that with all 8-inch, not replace the 8, but replace the 6 and the 4. And the others are different spots around our district where we need a pressure-reducing valve put in. There's over the years in one section on Pole Line Road, we have 3 different lines because originally it was a 1.5-inch line. Then they put in a 4, then they put in an 8. But we have connections off of all of those. We want to just consolidate them all to the 8-inch line so that we know what's going on there. And that's one of the projects. But so basically that's what these projects are, is just upgrading bottlenecks in our system and continuing on with the changes that Highway 40 afforded us to improve our system.
Thank you. Appreciate that. We'll go to Commissioner Winterton.
I would just like to cut to the chase here, and just I appreciate them coming back and asking for a change of scope. We're not doing any new money, so I'd make the motion that we approve this change of scope.
Second that.
Wow.
Wow.
We don't even have to take a vote on that one.
You got too many seconds, huh?
Yeah, let's give that one to Mayor Norton.
Okay. Well, I think we've got a favorite.
Being a second on the motion, sorry. Any further discussion on that motion?
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Oh, good.
Mr. Taylor, this money of the $240,000 is going to complete all your 5 items? You're not going to come back for more money?
Yes, those 5 items would all be covered by that, yes.
There will be no another phase 2 or 3 or 4 or 9.
I didn't hear your question. Say that.
There will be no more phasing, that this was only one phase, and we're going to come back with a second with the new money.
That's all of this project, yeah.
Okay. You may want to ask him if he realizes there's no UDOT angel.
I know.
Good questions. Any further questions on the motion? Seeing none.
Sorry, just real
great.
Quick.
Please. I almost missed it.
The 200, what's the split of it? Is it all grant money that is left, or?
Candace, would you explain how this works? I think that would be good for the board to know.
When the board authorizes funding, depending on the package that it is authorized, the applicant puts in cash, whatever the amount is. The CIB puts in cash of either a grant or a loan. The CIB grant funding is the last to go out of the escrow, so the remaining funding will be grant, but that was the original authorization anyway. So they will theoretically have expensed all of their own cash for the initial project. What is remaining of the 214, because the original request was almost that, is what the board authorized anyway. So if it was a loan grant and no applicant cash, the loan funding goes out first in any of CIB loans. If it's a loan only that you have authorized, any remaining funding, they would have to come in and ask for a change of scope as well. But if it is denied, or if they don't come in and ask for the utilization of the remaining funding, it is applied to the end of the loan.
That's good information to know. Thank you for that.
Yes.
Good question. Okay, we'll call the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, that passes unanimously. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
We'll turn the meeting back over to Chairman Hardy.
I'm back. Am I back? Okay, I am back. Okay, we're on to our last agenda item, which is board member discussion and action items. This is a follow-up from our discussion last month regarding the 7 County Infrastructure Coalition contract. I believe what you have in front of you is a proposed change. We'll call it a change. It's a proposed clarification of the scope of work. Our discussion last month was about clarifying several items and making sure that we felt like we had addressed everything that had some ambiguity out there. What we have before us is a document that our staff and Seven County Infrastructure Coalition staff have worked on. And what we want to do is just have a discussion and make sure everybody's comfortable with where we're at here. The idea is that we put to bed several of these, you know, outstanding ambiguity issues and be able to move forward with the original $5 million contract that was awarded back in 2015. So that this is the document we have in front of us. We've addressed several issues, some related to procurement, some just making sure we have an accurate scope of work that reflected the application. We've got a process in there to deal with any legislative activity that that has to be have prior approval, just to make sure it's in alignment with other state legislative priorities. That is in there as well. But certainly open to questions or any further discussion on this. We've also extended the we're proposing to extend the date to August 31st, 2020 for the completion of the contract. The original end date was, and normally we would do this. We do this all the time. The applicants request it, and we can do that administratively because it's already been approved by the board. But we are bringing all those items back for discussion just to make sure the board's on the same page with everything moving forward. So I'll open it up to any questions or comments on this.
Mr.
Zanotti.
I may have this question for Mr. Roberts. On number two, item number two, the last paragraph, of course, in the parentheses, gas, sewer, electric, telephone. In their financial representation last time, they had also fiber optic included. Do we need to add those kind of items, or that's inclusive? Item number two, 10-year plan.
I would think the utility infrastructure would include fiber optics. The things that are listed there generally, I would think, would be examples.
It would be the inclusive.
Okay. If you wanted to put that in, you would say, such as or something like that, or including.
So
that would make it more clear. The way I read it, those are examples, not an exclusive list.
Okay. Thank you.
I guess I could turn my. I was not here for that discussion last month. I did have a question on that. What everybody is agreeing to here are those infrastructure developments that will be constructed, owned, and operated by Seven County Coalition, or are they planning on doing this as agent on behalf of some other entity?
Well, their presentation was that agent on behalf of other entities. We have not seen any ownership.
Or it could be.
In addition.
There are, so I'll just point you back up to the opening paragraph on what the scope of work includes. So it says the project is to identify, administer, plan for, procure the funding for, permit, secure rights of way, own and operate revenue producing infrastructure assets or public facilities or services that will benefit the region. And you know, I think the bottom line here is this is the planning part of it. I certainly will see projects come before us that we'll really delve into whether who is going to own the assets and how that works in the communities and regions. This is more the planning part of it, but there are opportunities to secure those rights away or agreements to make those things happen.
So different set of rules is going to apply if there's ownership by the...
Well, it's it's one of those things where if they're developing 1, 5, and 10-year infrastructure development plans for a political entity, those would be that other political entity's plan, not theirs. Yeah. And so there's nothing here with regard to them working with or having those approved, authorized, or adopted by those entities. So I'm just not sure, because they go out and develop this really great infrastructure plan that nobody wants but them.
And if they're doing it on behalf of somebody else, it was just a strange structure to me in terms of, my initial question was own and operate. And then if it's, if they're doing it on behalf of the other entities, you would think they would be more explicitly in that process.
Well, we had that similar item 2 months ago with the Daggett County that they were doing the project on their behalf, and the Daggett County didn't know if they're going to have the ownership of it, and the PILT was the example of it. Are they going to pay the tax on that or challenges that's going to associate with that? So great question.
Oh, I know Eric Johnson, counsel to the Seven County Infrastructure Coalition, has walked to the table, so we can maybe ask him some questions directly about anything related to the coalition. Do you want to comment on the, the question was, is all infrastructure projects identified as a part of the scope of work contemplated to be owned and operated by the coalition, or would there be other opportunities where you identify the project, somebody else takes it on and does it because that's a more feasible or what is wanted, or how is that process going to work?
Any portion for which CIB funds would be expended would be owned by the coalition.
That was a short, succinct response.
So I guess my question is the ongoing funding, how does CIB, are we funding this continually, Eric, or where is the cutoff from the CIB monies and the funds and the owner and the operator? How does that all, I guess that's comes back to the question, how does that all work with the CIB and the Seven County Coalition? And I guess I'm looking for some answers from how this is going to work.
Sure. So the first paragraph in the proposed amendment is lifting language out of the original application as to, so when it says things about, owning and operating infrastructure projects and things like that, that's right out of the initial application to the Community Impact Board back in September of 2014. But the plan from the get-go was that with this money, which was in that application referred to as seed money, is to do studies and identify projects and then try and find projects that would be revenue producing that the coalition would undertake. And the coalition has a couple of those targeted right now. I'd be happy to answer questions on those if you would like. And the question, my recollection is the question was raised in 2014 whether $5 million would be enough to advance these projects, because the lead time on the projects is very long. So would $5 million be enough to get to the point that some of these projects were actually producing revenue? And there were those who expressed their concern that no, it wasn't enough, but they said, yeah, but just $5 million for now, and if you need more later, then come back later. But the anticipation is that the coalition will become self-sustaining. Whether it will become self-sustaining before all $5 million is expended or not is yet to be seen.
So we're really just dealing with this $5 million contract, and
okay.
Right now, unless they come back in, that's what you see is what we're getting out of that, the $5 million, which what we're trying to do is consistently apply a more detailed scope of work to the original application just so that there's no ambiguity. And some of you, just like I was not here when the original application came in, so it's kind of a fill-in for some of us who weren't a part of that original discussion, but we're trying to mirror all those things and just get the sufficient details in there so that we can finish out this project without having, them coming in every month or asking questions or having a lot of lingering doubts of what's going on out there, and that we'll be on the same page.
So this document is, but to reiterate, it's set up for clarity on the existing project. We're not extending it. We're not doing additional funding. And are we? We're just looking at this for information. Do we need to vote on it or anything? Okay, it's just
it's a discussion.
I
mean, what our intent as staff, since we have to manage the contract, is to have the board support to move forward with it. So it doesn't require a vote, but I want to have this as an open discussion so that everybody's on the same page and you know, we can finish out this project successfully. That's our objective. Commissioner Winterton.
I was going to say, maybe what it is that this is probably a little different than any other project that we've ever dealt with here, because generally the board screens each applicant and each project. Here we awarded them a large amount, and they're responsible for the projects to screen them and decide. And at the end of the time, it's no different. I mean, they'll own the product when they're done, because even if we loan something to somebody, we, as a board, do not own that project. We participate in it, but we do not claim ownership on any of that. And I think that sometimes that's where we get hung up, is that we're trying to hold this entity accountable for everything that they do, because it is different than the other projects we can. We're not assuming ownership on any of it, nor do we want to, because that's a liability. So if the board wants to own this product, assume the liability as it comes back.
Which is a good point, but and it's for my clarity, so a lot of the work that has been done, it's owned by the coalition.
Yes.
So, you know, work that's done in Daggett County. So at the end of 5 years, if the coalition dissolves, let's say, does the information that was collected in Duchesne and Daggett and stuff, does that go to them?
Yes, they will already have it, but yes, if the coalition were to dissolve, it would go back to them.
And the assets also?
Yes, and that's required both under our creating agreement as well as Utah law.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, Mayor Norton.
I know in our last meeting we discussed having someone meet with four members of this committee meeting with them to discuss some of the other issues. Has that taken place, or did we have anything back on that?
Well, I've met with the coalition a couple times. We've talked about some projects. I think they'd be interested in holding, you know, these work sessions to talk about specific projects if you want that as well. The other thing I think that's important to note, because I think this is a little bit has been a struggle, the whole discussion of proprietary information in an open public meeting, and being able to submit written reports, which is subject to GRAMA, but there's ways of protecting information under GRAMA that don't exist under the Open Public Meetings Act, is probably another good way for us to receive the information which is required in the scope of work to get written reports as specified by the CIB, subject to GRAMA. That's another venue as well, but I've always heard that they're willing to hold those work sessions. So if there's interest, we can set those meetings up. You know, I know they'd be interested in talking to any member individually. I went down to the coalition's meeting. Was it last week?
Last Friday.
Yes, last Friday. So you know, there was a closed session to discuss projects. I was invited in to listen to that. And I think there are opportunities to do that. Whoever wants to do that, we can coordinate that. Treasurer Danch.
Mr. Chair, a couple general comments. Something like this, I would recommend to staff that we work with a markup document so we know what's original and what's new.
Thank you.
I don't even want to talk about a document that is modified without clear black line distinctions of what's been stricken out and what's been added. That combined with written staff commentary would be most helpful in a situation like this, I think. But the other thing I wanted to say is, as far as differentiating, we've struggled with the round peg square hole aspect of the coalition. I would just put an analogy to it. During my many years in the banking industry, I would have a commercial loan request come to me, and there are some in the business community that get frustrated with commercial banks. They'll say, you know, when we really need the money, bank won't lend it. The bank will lend you money when you don't need it. And what that means, if you dig a little deeper, is if you have strong revenues, revenue growth, assets and collateral, banks will provide funding. So it's a disconnect between the business's expectations and what banks are really in the business of doing. And banks will occasionally digress from that a little bit, and they'll step out and take some risks. But I've repeatedly had to explain to commercial borrowers, just trying to explain, well, this is what a commercial bank does, and this is where they fit in the capital structure. We're not here to be venture capitalists and private equity investors. There are other players in the capital markets that do that. The CIB is a commercial bank. We are good at doing rock solid, well-defined, highly scrutinized, low to no risk transactions that are where we're provided with ample information. We have revenues to support and secure the financing in most cases, and the purposes of the whether it's a loan or a grant are fall within a fairly narrow band of public infrastructure, things that are readily understood and that we're really built to handle. And so CIB is a commercial bank, and the Seven County Infrastructure Coalition is out there on the border of economic development activities that are venture capital-like, private equity-like. We're investing a lot of money. There's no revenues. There's no assets. There's no projects. There's just searching and looking and probing and hopefully finding something that will come together. This is very not what CIB is built for, and that's been one of the concerns I've had all along, is their activities. There's just no way we can ever take what they're doing and have it match up with anything else that CIB does, because what they're doing doesn't fit with what CIB is built to do. It's not a criticism. I just throw that analogy out there. I think it's an important way of rationalizing or understanding what we're looking at and what we're dealing with the coalition.
So, and just before we go to you, Commissioner Lytle, I just want to also point out that is a relevant discussion item, but at the end of the day, we're trying to clarify the board's decision of 2 years ago, and that's really what we're dealing with here. And I certainly, what the treasurer has pointed out is worthy of discussion for any future consideration of projects and where it fits within the realm of CIB. And you know, and I'm with him. I don't think he was around when this project came to fruition as well. So we're all kind of like getting up to speed and making sure that we can honor this contract going forward, which is really what we talked about in our November meeting, and making sure we have clarifications going forward. So that go to Commissioner Lytle.
I didn't see how this ended up in front of me. Was it provided by?
Everybody has
staff.
One.
Staff.
Who?
Staff.
Oh, it's from staff. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I didn't understand that.
Okay.
First of all, and then the second part of it was, is it something that was collaborated on to develop?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
At this point, I can say from a staff perspective, we feel comfortable that this fits within the nature of what the CIB originally approved in 2015 and addresses the appropriate clarifications that existed in the contract. It certainly doesn't address, you know, philosophical issues people may have about what we do going forward, but we feel comfortable that we've gotten to a spot where we can move forward with the $5 million contract as is with these clarifications.
Okay, and then...
But my understanding, it's not been voted on by the Seven County Board. I don't know if that has to happen or... but we did work with the Executive Director and Council on this, and I believe all of the board members were kind of kept in the loop on this. Or?
We have informed the chairs.
Okay.
So that leads to my question with, at least from a staff perspective and yourselves, this is workable, doable. Maybe not everybody's happy, but they can live with it.
Mike McKee will recommend it to the coalition board to accept that. Yes.
just for curiosity to understand what communications have occurred. Thank you for working on that. I mean, that was kind of the work process. So is this something that is informational in its form today?
Yeah, we want to make
sure. We're not calling for a motion or anything to accept it or anything else. It's informational relative to the staff's input and work with Seven County to come up with a workable.
Right, and this is really
arena
tailored after the suggestions we brought forward in the November meeting of those clarifications we wanted. So we feel like we've gotten there. Yes, Mr. Galecki.
So I've got a question with there being a date of August 31st, 2020. So does that mean if the current funding isn't spent by then, that it goes back to the board?
That's the way the contract will be structured. Right now it's August 31st, 2018.
Okay.
So this would modify the contract to extend that date. If money isn't spent by then, you know, the coalition can continue to request an extension on the date if the scope of work isn't fulfilled, just like any other contract that we deal with here in CIB. The project's approved by the board. We enter into a contract. It has an end date. We've extended end dates. We do that administratively rather than bringing it back to the board.
So, and then if the coalition runs out of money prior to that, then it comes to the board again to decide how to fund and such.
Yep.
Eric, do you have a sense of how much longer the current funds will last?
The real question is how much funding we will be able to attract for some of the key projects that we're looking at. We're putting together some applications for funding from USDA, Rural Development, Rural Utility Services on electrical, water, and also funding natural gas utilities. And then you already know about the application for a Tiger grant to study rail project into the basin through Craig, Colorado. And so as those come on board, my anticipation is that we will draw less and less on this pool, and it'll be more project specific. And so at the rate that money has been expended in the past, it would all be expended before August 31st of 2020 if it all came out of this fund. But moving forward, our hope is that there'll be other funds of money that we'll draw on, and this fund may actually, we may not move through it as fast as we have been. That's the hope.
So my next question is that, so if additional, so if the coalition runs out of money prior to the state, is it set up as such that we would, it would be our option whether to fund it under the current contract or to look at it as a project by project basis? Are we fixed into this description?
Either or is an option. That's really how the applicant chooses to address it, and then the board can deal with it.
And if we don't have the money, then there's no plans anyway.
Right? And the one action where it does speak to whether or not the pre-contract professional service expenses, that was one thing that we did vote on, though.
Yes, that we did definitively address that, yes.
Okay, and this just restates it for...
Yeah, that just puts it in the contract. I mean, that's so an auditor comes in and they look at, you know, hey, you paid $37,000 for expenses that occurred before the award date. So rather than having to go fish through the minutes of last meeting and then play them for them, say, oh yeah, here's where it was approved, we stick it right in the contract, it's agreed to. So it's more of an audit trail.
Okay.
Issue.
And thank you for your patience. I also didn't disclose at the beginning of my comments as being a board member for Seven County, but I'll make sure that that's there for anybody who wants to,
okay,
has an interest in that.
Any further discussion? Yes, Mr. Roberts.
Sorry. I just saw this today, so you know, I apologize for not
I did have one question. I note that the statute with regard to procurement requires interlocal entities to adopt rules and policies for the competitive public procurement of goods and service. Is there a reason why public is not mentioned in your description of the procurement process?
Good check.
I don't see any problem adding that word in there. No, I wouldn't see a problem with that. In other words, no, there isn't a reason.
Okay.
It just wasn't put in, that's all.
Okay. For clarification, if I may, one more. So once this is settled and we've had a chance to read it, go over it, the cumulative we, both Seven County and the two boards, is the idea that there'd be some affirmative action or something to say, yeah, go ahead, this looks good for the change in scope? Or are you expecting this to be more administrative and once we've seen this, we're done?
From our perspective, it's administrative. So it's a discussion here, and then we would be prepared to execute an amendment. And, of course, they would have to agree to an amendment as well. So they have a different – it's up to them what their process is, whether that's seated in the executive director or whether it has to go to the board. But we're ready to move forward unless there are objections or strong feelings from the board.
Okay.
But we don't need a vote. That's my understanding, right, Tom?
Staff has taken the position that this is merely administrative. Obviously, the board has authority over the administrative practices. They could call this forward for a vote or a review.
So the answer to his question, it could go either way. That you're asking for it to be administrative, but we would have the opportunity if we chose to initiate it.
If you wanted to take an action right now, I think that's what Tom's saying. If you wanted to take an action, you have that right to make a motion in some regard regarding this administrative action. Is that?
Yeah, or whether they provided notice to you of proposed administrative action. You as the governing board can review things that you want to review. So you could make this a matter of board approval.
And I'm not trying to send smoke signals that that's the way it should go at all, but I'm curious to see if you think there's more work that needs to be done, or if you're looking for more input from the board, if we could see something that's the final draft in essence for the next meeting, or if that would, if that's redundant or unnecessary, short of whatever comes from this.
Well,
if people haven't had an opportunity to review it till this 2 hours.
And you can continue to review it because we do believe this is an administrative action. We don't want to have to go to the next meeting, which is clear in February, and then inviting them back and discussing this again. I think we...
We're kind of getting used to it.
Yeah. We talked a lot about it in November to try to get the issues out on the table that need to be clarified. We have tried to address that in this amendment. We feel, from a staff perspective, that we've gotten to as good a spot as I think we need to. We worked with the coalition, and I think we've got some consensus there. So we're ready to move forward on it, but certainly you have an opportunity to review it, provide some input. It takes a little time to officially finalize everything, but we would want to be working on this a lot sooner than
to
the February board meeting.
To get it formalized as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Thank you for your indulgence.
The original is that one paragraph. So, I mean, I don't think it doesn't really look that different than the opening paragraph. I mean, it's half the size with some of the information in there. So it's really an addition to rather than a strike through of anything. That's how I'd characterize it. But we can send you what the original scope of work looked like. And to be fair, going back to the discussion about how this is a different type of project than this board has ever dealt with, you know, normally our scopes of work are very concise. They're very less than a paragraph just describing the project that is, you know, proposed in the application. And it's very easy to understand if you're going to repair a road that's what you do and that's the scope of work. You know, when you get into the nature of doing this involved planning and the studies that were contemplated in this application, we probably had too short of a scope of work to really deal with all the situations, which is what we've learned over the last couple of years and why we wanted to get a little more detail in there.
I have one question for you. So the funding that's continuing, will they continue to come to us for other funding sources, or are they going to continue just to use what they have now? I mean, they've come in a couple times to for matching monies on projects. Does that continue that same way?
Well, and I brought this up as well, you know, when they came in for the Daggett study, I think you'll recall that. And it is up to the applicant to apply for something, but I think that's certainly worthy of a board discussion of whether that should be spent down out of this money, or whether if they have a separate project they're applying for, whether it needs to come down, be funded separately. And we did have that discussion with the Daggett County trail study, and I think that's appropriate to have that for any application that the coalition submits while there's other outstanding money. I think that's worthy of discussion.
Okay, would they also have to have their projects? And I know they had one that they pulled today, but it went through the AOG. Are they still going to have to go through that process?
Yeah, and that is specified in the amendment that they have to notify all association governments and other affected public bodies and place them on the associated capital improvement list. So that is an addition to the scope of work. Treasurer Damchin.
One more quick comment. Another analogy, I'll apologize, hopefully. I don't know if these analogies help or not. I mentioned earlier when we were talking about stretching amortizations as a recommendation, and I offered a contrarian perspective that maybe that's not always the right choice, because keeping amortization short is one of the keys to how we do business in Utah. If you follow discussions on the state's budget, and I don't know if most of you are familiar with the notion of structural balance, but the legislature, when they come together on the budget each year, a critical component in sound fiscal management is matching one-time money sources with one-time uses and ongoing sources with ongoing uses. And this is one of the other challenging and problematic aspects of the coalition, and it ties to the additional request a little bit, because we have one-time $5 million grant that is in part funding ongoing salaries. And I would argue that the substantial attorney's fees that we're paying are tantamount to, in-house legal, you could call it in-house legal counsel, but we have these ongoing compensation components that are drawn from a one-time grant, $5 million grant. And I would just say that's not prudent. You know, if I'm tying back to my earlier comments, the Utah way and you know, sound conservative fiscal management, as I would say, short amortizations are preferable. I would also say it's always preferable to be mindful of appropriate matching one-time to one-time, ongoing to ongoing. This is very unusual that we have a $5 million grant that's funding very sizable salaries and ongoing compensation arrangements. It just doesn't match up with what CIB typically does. And so that's my last analogy for the day, but I just wanted to throw that into the conversation.
I was hoping it could be more barnyard.
Yeah, are there any other further discussion items on this proposed amendment? Okay, seeing none, looks like we've concluded our agenda. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So made.
Okay, I think I'll give that to Mayor Norton, even though I'm trying to...